Well, welcome to a brand new episode of Guitar Talk. I am your host, Jimmy Warren. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It's going to be a great show. Before we get into it, you know what? Guitar Talk is about to end its fourth season. I've hosted some of the biggest names in the guitar world, from Steve Vai and Satriani to Andy Timmons and Paul Gilbert and Lee Ritenour and Larry Carlton. I mean, you name it, they've all been on the show at one point or another. In that, but now we're doing something different. Now you can subscribe to Guitar Talk through Spotify for $2.99 a month, and you can get all kinds of exclusive content, bonus content, unseen stuff. You're going to get interviews that I'm not going to post on the regular podcast, that were only going to be for people that are subscribers, and plus you're going to get early episodes. You're going to be able to see and hear the episodes early. So it's only $2.99. All you got to do is just go to Spotify for Guitar Talk and you can sign up there. There you go. So we hope you do that. Now, the guy that's on this show today, I've interviewed him before, and he's, I think, a really talented guy. I mean, he's a fascinating guy. One of the things that I find really fascinating is that he is from Norway. Not that being from Norway is, you know, the most fascinating thing, but it's kind of cool because, you know, I'm not from Norway. But he's in a band in South America called Armored Dawn. He's traveled all the way from Norway to South America to play some hard rock in a great band. Armored Dawn is a really good band. They just got done doing the Blue Ridge Rock Festival. So, you know, they're known all over the world. And so this is somebody that you need to pay attention to. His name is Timo Karoski. Boy, I hope I pronounced that right. Timo, if I didn't, please let me know. And we had a great conversation and that you're going to get to enjoy right now. So do yourself a favor. Put your feet up. Get a nice cool drink. And enjoy this conversation with Timo, the guitarist for Armored Dawn, right here on Guitar Talk.
Hi there.
How you doing, man?
Oh, fine.
Yeah?
For some reason, the screens keep showing the name of my wife, but that's me. I think she was using my computer for some reunions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Cool, man. So how's life in South America?
Oh, it's back to normal. Chaotic, polluted, and too many people everywhere, especially here in Sao Paulo, because officially, there lives like 15 million people here, but unofficially, there's like slums that nobody knows how many people there is. So it's expected that around 18 to 20 million people live here. So,
wow.
It's pure hell sometimes. Oh, man. Too many people, too many cars, too much traffic, too much everything.
I live in a town that's got 30,000, and I think it's too crowded.
Yeah. Here, sometimes I go to the studio, it's like 5 miles or something. Usually it takes like half an hour. Sometimes it takes 1.5 hours, so you never know.
Yeah, wow. Well, yeah, I mean, it's the same way in Chicago or L.A. or New York or, you know.
Yeah.
Go to Nashville during rush hour. Oh my God. You know, it's insane. It's insane. So you got a lot going on. You guys got some new music coming out.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole album already is ready done, but I think we're going to release it most likely in the beginning of next year. And until I think this year, still we're going to release at least one more single.
Yeah.
And put them out slowly this way. And
Yeah. So how has the response been so far to the new music that has released?
Oh, surprisingly good. I think people seem to enjoy it. I think the new songs, they sound a bit more modern than what it used to be. And people seem to like that, even the older fans, because, you know, we are old school people. We like the music. We listen to 70s and 80s. And there's lots of people who really like the older songs. That was more like old stuff, but even they seem to enjoy the more kind of a little bit more modern songs. And but yeah. I think the most modern thing that we put to the song is in the name of the keyboards. You know, they have some modern sounds, and Just try to update a little bit, the songs. Not always keep doing the same thing.
Yeah. So does the band? Does your band feel like they, you know, have to, I don't know, progress, or do they feel like, do you feel like your fan base, you know, is in a certain zone, and so you want to stay in that zone, or are you guys pushing, you know, for something different, something fresh, something new?
The plan was, we really thought about it for a long time and figured that we're gonna try to attract younger people to listen to rock music, because nowadays kids, they start listening to hip hop, some other, nothing against that, but you know, there's not so many kids these days listening to rock and roll.
Right.
And the ones that listen, they prefer to hear something more modern, you know, more like new kind of band. So we try to adjust our band to for a little bit more of their modern sounds to, who knows, attract younger people to listen to us as well. Because, you know, let's face the fact that people of my age, we're getting 50-something. People are married, have kids, and they don't go out to shows anymore so much like they used to. So if you want to keep playing, you must get the young people to do it. And plus, of course, you know, the bands that we listen, soon they're going to retire, or, you know, musicians, they get older, they die, and, you know, soon there's nothing to see. So to keep the world of rock and roll going, we need younger people to, you know, stay strong to rock and roll genre in general.
Right. So what do you do as a guitarist, you know, in a band that tours, and, you know, with what you just said, what do you do? What do you have to do in order to, I don't know, you know, if we're going to talk about younger people, what do you got to do to stay relevant to them as a guitar player?
That's a big challenge, because, you know, we're not gonna start doing that dances in the TikTok videos,
right,
you know.
Right,
so that's right. What everybody does. So, you know, we try to listen to what the other bands, younger bands do, and we try to, you know, like in the old days, if I would make an album the way I wanted to do it, it would be just full of guitar solos and all blues based everything things. So now sadly you have to reduce the guitar solos to kind of minimum, because even if these days you do lots of solos, they're not gonna play it in the radio.
Yeah.
Which still is, you know, important way for us to spread the music. And kids today, they are not so much into guitar solos, sadly. But yeah. who knows, that will evolve. So
yeah, well, we lost that right at one point in time when we hit the whole grunge thing.
Oh yeah.
And the guitar just disappeared completely. There were no solos at all in anything. It was just three or four chords.
Yeah.
You know, just over and over and over again. And I got to tell you, man, when that happened, because I'm a guitar guy, when that happened, I mean, they lost me completely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they did. I mean, nothing against Nirvana or any of those bands, but I don't have one album.
No, same here. That's nothing against who listens to them, but that's, you know, I won't be one of those guys.
right.
I still need the guitar there.
So now, do you find out as a guitar player that you have to craft what you're doing on the guitar to fit an audience as opposed to fitting the song?
We try to do kind of the both, because still the basic is always the song, and we still try to get as much technical things as we can, because, you know, otherwise it's gonna be boring if you're just gonna keep playing three chords for the 2-hour show. So that's never happening. So we still try to keep the, you know, musicality in the songs, but try to get it somehow a little bit more simplified for the younger people.
Right, because, you know, a lot of times when you get into harder music, you get into harder rock or thrash, or, you know, what's considered new metal or black metal or whatever you want to call it. It's like when it comes to the guitar, there isn't a whole lot of melody.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of structuring the guitar, the melody of the guitar to fit the song. It's, you know, there's a solo, it's thrashing, it's in your face. And, you know, that's the way it was meant to be. But now, as you're talking about with a newer audience, a younger audience, a little bit different sound, do you find, as the guitar player in a hard band, that you have to start crafting the solos to be a little bit more melodic to fit that?
I think our solos, basically both me and Tiago, the other guitar player, we both tend to do more melodic things than just, you know, fast notes without, you know, because I keep always saying for the guitar players who want to play fast that, you know, there's no point in running unless you know where you are going.
Right.
So, you know, you have to have some musical idea in the solos also. And I, because, you know, my influences is from the old guys like Ritchie Blackmore and David Gilmour and all these old guys that was all based on melodies and beautiful things. And the other guy, he studied a lot of jazz and all kinds of things like that. So he has a lot of chord progressions that he's doing. So I think we're never going to be too simplified anyway in this. It's just more that we simplify, more the song structure to be more kind of modern, add some keyboards there that have modern sounds and instead of Hammond or something that I would put to all the songs if I could.
Right. Because I really feel, I mean, there's a lot of hard rock bands that are very melodic. I mean, for instance, you know, look at Metallica, for instance.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff Metallica does, even though some of it's like really hard, it's really in your face, a lot of it is very melodic.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And I think those songs and those aspects of those songs, of what they do, is the stuff that draws a guy like me in. Because when I was young, man, I loved the hard in your face, just going at it.
Yeah.
But the older I got, the more I really appreciated something that was really kind of crafted.
Exactly.
For the song.
Yeah. And also when you do it this way, the songs, you get the much wider audience, because sometimes, you know, like we did some of the songs that we did that are really, really heavy. We did some acoustic versions. And even people who don't listen to rock music at all, even they like them.
Yeah.
So you that way you kind of might even manage to bring them to listen to some little bit harder songs also. The audience can be much more wide if you manage to do this.
Yeah.
You even get people who like pop music to listen to this, you know.
Yeah. Do you find, or do you think that once you've gone down a path, I'll give you for instance, when I started playing, it was all blues, right?
Yeah.
I played with all the historic blues guys in Chicago. It was all blues. And you find out that once you start to go down a specific lane as a player, people identify you in that lane.
Yeah.
And then when it comes time to say, well, I want to do something different or to grab another demographic, another audience. I mean, how difficult, outside of the music, how difficult do you think that is to pivot as a band when it comes to marketing and, you know, advertising or this stuff that you got to do in order to reach out to people to get them to change their mind about what they think about you because of what they perceive because of what you've done in the past?
Oh, yeah, exactly. This can happen. I think the biggest danger in doing every time we try to change the style of the band is that people start saying that, oh, they sold out. Now they're trying to do something commercial to, you know, sell, get money, get rid of something.
Right.
Even, you know, many times it's more like natural. At once you just get tired of doing the same thing all over again. And, right. You know, it's not just that you're going to sell out. And, you know, it's sometimes for some musicians, it's really difficult. And I remember when I used to listen to Gary Moore a lot in the 80s and 70s when he was doing more hard rock stuff. And then suddenly he started doing blues and people are like, what the hell is this now? He did really well. He sold tons of albums that way. But, you know, lots of people who like the hard rock stuff, they were really wondering, like, how come he's now playing the blues? So it took some time for people to get used to it.
You know, it was that way with me when it come to Rush.
Yeah.
When the band Rush switched and they started adding a lot more keyboards and it became a little bit, I don't know, it wasn't the same anymore. It had a completely different sound. They lost me.
Yeah,
they did for a period of time. There was like a stretch of several years where I didn't go see Rush. I didn't buy any Rush albums and stuff. And then after a while, you realize, well, shit, this is actually pretty damn good.
Yeah.
What the hell's my problem? Right, it's still Rush.
Yeah.
Right.
It happens. You know, you got so used to hearing something. They really do this this style well. Why would they go this way now? Why they have to change? So,
right.
What are they after? Why they're doing this?
Right. But at the core, let's just admit it. At the core, Armored Dawn is just a really good rock band. It doesn't matter if you want to put it in the hard rock or the metal or the classic, whatever box you want to put it in.
Yeah,
it's just a great band.
Yeah, to me, usually when people ask what kind of how to determine what kind of music we play, I usually say that to me, there's two kinds of music. There's good music and bad music, and we prefer to try to be in the good music section.
But also, too, you know, I wonder, you know, from your standpoint, coming from where you come from, right? The country that you come from, the region that you come from. I mean, let's face it, there's some really hard stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know, that comes from that region. Do people tend to put you in that box simply because you're from that area?
Yes, they expect me to, you know, do just the kind of music that every time you in Finland they have hard, you know, like melodic metal bands or just black metal or something, and they think that, oh, he's from Finland, he must play this, but
yeah,
that's, you know, because that's basically all they know. That most of the bands that come out of there, that's what they play. So people automatically think that, oh, he's from Finland, that's what he's gonna play.
Right.
And then they see something completely different.
Right. Well, there's a lot of great bands that come from that region. There's a lot of great players that come from that region that aren't necessarily all, you know, really, really hard or really, really dark in that, you know. Actually, you know, I've met just some amazing players, you know, from the whole Norwegian section of the world, man.
Yeah.
There's some great, great players that have come out of there.
Oh, what helps is because in Finland, we have lots of musical education in basic school. I remember in third grade, they did some tests. They make some like psychological tests to see what you're talented in. So they separate you. If you're talented in mathematics, they tend to join those together to the same group. And like I was talented in music, they joined us in a one group, and we had music like 6 or 8 hours every week, just in basic school. In addition, they gave classes. I learned guitar, I played violin, singing, all those days, singing, they taught us in the school. And so people really study a lot of music there. Plus, you know, it's a especially winter, it's a cold and dark country. You can't really go out to have fun. So what you can do is sit at home and play.
What are you going to do?
Or you drunk, or you choose.
It makes me wonder what kind of group they put me in, because I excel at taking naps.
Yeah.
Yeah. <no. laughs> What kind of group would I be in? It's like, just nap. That's all we'll do, right? I think that's really cool. I didn't know that about that area. I mean, I didn't know that they did that.
Yeah.
I think that's actually kind of cool, but it because it takes what you're interested in or what you're gifted in, and it just helps you develop that.
Exactly. I think in the beginning they thought that because, you know, Finland is a small country, we don't have gold, oil, anything like that. So the only way the country to survive is educate well the people. Yeah. So that's how they're like thinking how they're gonna educate how education gonna work best. So of course it's better to, you know, focus more on what you're talented in.
Yeah.
So that's where you get in the end you get the best results.
Yeah.
Not just the music in mathematics and, you know, science, anything. And it seemed to work. They are doing quite well there. So
no, that's I think that sounds genius, actually. You know,
yeah.
I think that's really, really smart. So during those days, when you're focusing on music and you're just learning guitar and you're just going down that path, what are some things you think you did, you know, that kind of helped develop you into the player that you are right now?
I think for me to help, I was listening to a lot of different kind of music. It's not just rock music that I like. I listen to lots of classical music, blues, jazz, some jazz. And I'm not a jazz guy, but I listen to some jazz also. And there's lots of interesting stuff there. Difficult to play, but lots of really cool stuff there. And, you know, I try to always keep my eye open and listen to different things, not just focus on the same thing that I always like. Right. I think that helps you. Even when you don't understand it, you're going to get influenced from somebody else. You heard something jazz, somebody play, you know, any instrument, not necessarily just guitar, but some other instrument in jazz, and you hear it, and it's always going to be somewhere in your head.
Right.
And that influence, you don't maybe necessarily realize it.
Yeah. You know, you find that, at least I have anyway, because, man, I've talked to, oh my God, hundreds. I mean, literally hundreds of great guitar players from all over the world. And one thing that I've discovered is that anybody that's good
has
exactly that, has really paid attention to a diverse, you know, scope of music and instruments. Some of the best guitar players crafted a lot of their stuff from horn sections or violins or whatever it is. And that,
yeah,
you gotta, I mean, that's good advice to anybody, you know, playing any instrument, to pay attention to a variety of stuff and don't just be laser focused. Cause I've seen it where, you know, people get into a type of music that they like and they enjoy, and they don't ever look outside of it. When it comes to their own playing, you know, and so I think you become really limited.
Exactly. You just can't say, you know, looking, this is my view. I'm going to just do this now. And
right. And it's the same. And that's the same way if you're a guitar player, that's the same way when it comes to the instrument. When you say, there's some guys that say, well, I'm a Les Paul guy, it's all I play is a Les Paul, or I'm a Marshall guy and all I play is a Marshall. But there's so much to gain. Let me ask you this. When you pick up a Gibson Les Paul, and then you pick up, let's say, a Telecaster, do you find that you play each instrument differently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a completely different instrument, and you start playing different things with Telecaster. And, you know, people who just play with the same instrument, they gonna end up playing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Same way, well, like listening to different views, you pick up different instrument, you start playing different things, and that's going to help you develop.
Right. And even though, you know, when you pick up, doesn't matter what guitar you pick up, you sound like you, you play like you, but you approach it differently than you do, you know, whether you're playing a Telecaster or playing a Firebird or whatever, a 335, whatever it is. I don't know if it's mental, because you feel like, oh, this is more of a jazz guitar, and so therefore I need to. But I think it's more than that. I think it's the tone. It's the feel and the sound, don't you?
Exactly, but it feels completely different. And you know, so somehow in deep inside you feel like you have to play something different with this. And not that you have to, but you automatically start playing something different.
Right. But at the same time, I think some people fall into the trap of, okay, I'm a rock guitarist, so what I play has to look
the
part.
Yeah. Well, that was more when you were younger. And, you know, when you get older, you start caring less about the looking cool and, you know, just want to play what sounds the best.
Right. What's the lightest?
Also.
What's the lightest? What sounds the best and isn't going to kill my back? Right? It's like gear too. You know, when you're young, you don't mind. You'll haul around a Marshall stack.
Yep.
You don't mind. But when you get older now, well, you got one behind you. You got a Kemper behind you.
Yeah.
That's the go-to now for everybody.
That's basically what we are using. And not just because it makes life easier. Also because, you know, for us, because we live in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Here, everything is really far. So most of the shows that we do, we have to fly. Yeah. So you can't, you can fly with your Marshall amp, but as soon as you get to the counter at the airport and the lady tells you how much you have to pay for it, you're going to quit and you're going to get one of these.
Right. Right. So well, did you do this since you're using, you know, a Kemper? Did you profile your own rigs, or did you just, you know, go in and dial in what works best for you?
We did both of the things. We had the ready sound that we have. We tried to twist them a little, but the one we are using, we did our own at the studio. So
to get
it sound like us, because, you know, it's more familiar. It's what we always mean, you know, how we always sounded, to keep sounding the same with the Kemper also.
Yeah. So when you travel, you know, you're talking about doing, you know, fly dates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, do you just take a couple of guitars?
Yeah.
You know, is that
I think usually yeah. I have a case that fits three guitars, and with you know, you can, if you don't take the heaviest of the Les Pauls, you can get three guitars without paying extra in the airplane, and then you can take camper and go, and that's it.
Right. I mean, I've seen, because I've been to some hard rock metal festivals where yeah. every band on the roster is using a Kemper. Nobody's got an amp anywhere.
No, you it's know? Getting really, really popular this way. It's really, really, because it's extremely easy. And, you know, when you, you know, once you're done, the sound is there, you're probably going to be using digital soundboard anywhere. So the whole band is already mixed readily. So basically, all you need to do is plug in and then check the volume, and you're ready to go. Because especially when you play many times, like if you play in the festivals, many times you don't even have time to do check it, so just sound check at all. So right. with these things, basically you don't need it. You just check the volume and you're ready to go.
Right. So are you playing with in-ears, or are you still using monitors?
I would say sadly in-ears. I'm still trying to get used to it. It has good points and bad points. Because yeah. you know, you really miss the loudspeaker, you know, moving yeah. the earth behind you, and that, I mean, you play differently when you don't feel what you're playing.
Right.
That's why I know there's guys in the studio that they record everything with Kemper or something, but to be able to play, they put an amplifier next to them and turn it all the way up to feel yeah. every note that they're playing. So
I've never played with in-ears ever.
Yeah.
And I did a show not long ago, and my band was live. We had live amps. We were using monitors. I mean, you could hear it. You could feel it and everything. Yeah. And then there was another band on the same bill where they didn't have any amps on stage. It was all in ears. And it just felt so foreign and weird to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just like, I mean, I'm on the stage when they're doing their sound check, and I'm going, I don't know if I could do this.
Yeah, because that's going to hit the drums. So
yeah, that's crazy. So you know, you say you can take three guitars. You know, I've seen you with a Les Paul and a Strat. I mean, what do you really prefer, and why?
To me, I actually would prefer both of them. You know, I've always been between Les Paul and Stratocaster. I started with Stratocaster, so that's always been close to my heart. But sound-wise, for this band, I think the Les Paul worked better. So that's basically why I'm using Les Paul with this band.
Yeah,
I have another project where I play, where I just take the Stratocasters and play those. So I still keep playing both of them, even, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I completely get it, because they both sound different. And are you a Telecaster guy at all? Do you like a
Telecaster? I have one Telecaster. I bought the Richie Kotzen Telecaster. And
that's a nice guitar.
Awesome. Awesome guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's something about a Telecaster. I feel like it's the desert island guitar. If you can only have one guitar, I mean, I don't know. There's something about a Telecaster that seems really versatile. I don't know.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. I hope in the future I can get to play more of that also. And
yeah.
Maybe not with this band, but with some other band.
I had a conversation once, it was last year, with John Five.
Right? Yeah.
And, you know, he's an amazing, I mean, great, great guitar player. And so, you know, I gotta find out why this guy is just so dialed into a Telecaster, because you don't see guys in that world, in your world, you typically don't see a guy playing a Telecaster.
No, it's really, really unusual.
Yeah. And I don't know if you probably know this, you know, but I found out it was because he grew up watching the TV show Hee Haw. Yeah, are you familiar with Hee Haw?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he grew up watching Hee Haw. And so he figured that if you're a guitar player, you played a Telecaster, because all the great guitar players played Telecaster. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Then he got stuck playing that. But he sounds really good with that. And he's a great guitar player.
Yeah, yeah. I think it doesn't matter, you know, because once again, if you're a good guitar player, or if you're a great guitar player, it doesn't matter what guitar you play.
Yeah.
You're going to get there.
Everything sounds good.
Yeah. You're going to, because, you know, they say the sound is in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but there's got to be something to it, because I've been around really great players that it didn't matter what they picked up.
Yeah.
They sounded like themselves and they were really good. So when let's look at your Les Pauls, is there anything that are must-haves for you? I mean, is there a specific pickup you have to use? Or is there a specific pot, you know, is there a specific wiring harness? I mean, what is it about your Les Pauls that are special to you?
Actually, I think all of mine are basically stock. I never changed anything in them. And the way I bought them, I keep using, and to me, they sound perfect that way. And, you know, I never felt any necessity to change anything in those.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish I could do that. I don't think I have. I mean, I've got some vintage guitars that are collectible, yeah, that are stock. I mean, I wouldn't touch those. But any guitar that I really play, it's like, not one of them stock. Everything about them is different than what I bought. Do you ever feel like, man, going down that rabbit hole and just really experimenting, or
do you feel like- I've been thinking of doing it, but I'm afraid, because I know myself. So if I start doing it, I'm gonna like it, and I'm gonna wanna do it with lots of guitars, and I'm not gonna eat anymore because I'm gonna spend all my money on doing that.
Yeah,
but well, I think eventually I'm gonna do some experimenting with different pickups and stuff. And
yeah, are you the same? Is it the same way with all your guitars? I mean, your Strats and everything. Everything's stock.
In the Strats, some of them I put some. I changed some of the pickups, but yeah, you know, basically I keep them stock.
Yeah, yeah. I've always when it comes to the Strats, don't get me wrong, I have American made. I'm not one of those guys that gets hung up on where the guitar's made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who cares if it's made here, if it's made in Korea, if it's made in Japan?
Yeah. If it's a good guitar, it's a good guitar.
Exactly. Exactly. But I found myself for a period of time back in the 90s, early 2000s, I bought a crap load of Mexican Strats because they were like, what, $299?
Yeah.
$399. I would buy the guitar because I would like the neck on it would be good, and I liked the color of it. And then I would change everything about it.
Yeah.
And you know, you spend about $500 or $600 changing everything. And for $800, you got a guitar.
Perfect guitar.
Yeah, it comes off the anything that's good. I mean, it's just as good as anything that comes off the, you know, the custom shop or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think once you go down that rabbit hole, though, of experimenting, changing the nut and changing the wiring harness and changing, I don't think there's no coming back.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah.
Then you just keep experimenting. And there's tons of options. And
So on your Strats, I mean, what kind of frets do you like? Do you like the jumbo frets? I mean, do you like me, or does it matter?
I thought also usually keep jumbo.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find that on, like, do you like a thicker, chunkier neck? Do you like something? Because if you're playing a Les Paul, I mean,
yeah,
a lot of the Les Pauls are like baseball bats.
Exactly. I had some, I had lots of Ibanez guitars, Ibanez gems. I had like 30 of those. I sold all of them after I started playing Les Paul because I couldn't play them anymore. It's too thin. I just couldn't play anymore though. So
you find out that when you got a guitar like a Les Paul, you have to work harder.
In the beginning, yeah. But then when you get used to it, not yeah, so much anymore.
Because especially you mentioned Ibanez. I mean, come on. I mean, a lot of the Ibanezes, especially if you go to the Japanese models of the Ibanezes and at the 80s and the Prestiges and all that other kind of stuff. I mean, those guitars, I know they don't play themselves, but man, when you pick one of those up versus, you know, a new Les Paul or a new Strat, it's like they're so much easier to play.
Oh yeah, you feel like I have to play fast because now I can with the Ibanez.
So since you're using a Kemper and you don't have an amp, I'm guessing you don't use any pedals at all or anything. Everything's just all in the Kemper.
Yeah. Straight to Kemper and that's it.
Yeah. You don't ever feel the need to.
Absolutely. But for that, then I have this, you know, this.
Ah. Yeah.
And some pedals. And when I want to go old school, then I go really old school.
what year is the White Marshall?
That's, I think it's 79.
79. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
100 watts.
Yeah. And where
neighbors
that?
Love it.
Yeah. I bet they do. Where do you use 100 watts anymore? Nowhere, huh?
No, that's the problem. And the problem is that it starts sounding good when the volume passes like 7 or 8.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what are you doing now, you know, in order to keep yourself, you know, at the peak of your game as a guitarist? Mm-hmm. I mean, because I know once you hit, you know, once you got certain things going on, and once you're touring and once you're recording and you got all that going on, sometimes you don't ever have time to woodshed on your own and to spend time developing yourself. So what do you do in order to keep yourself at the top of your game, apart from the recording and doing live shows?
I try to, whenever I have time, I try to spend at least one or 2 hours each day still to just practicing. And
yeah,
I usually do like once or twice a year. I pick up the first books from when I started learning guitar, go to the really, really basics and start passing those. Because, you know, sometimes when you play long time more complicated stuff, you forget the really basic things. And it's really educating sometimes to go back there to remember how was the really, really simple things. And that I try to do at least once a year. I do that. I have some books from when I was a kid and I still try to learn those. And
yeah.
But plus, I still have books from the times that I played violin, and I start playing those with guitar also.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, you know, trying to expand, you know, your playing skills? Like, you know, some guys go from using a pick to playing more with their fingers, or, you know what I mean? People start to try to experiment with different things. Do you do that as well, or do you find that, you know, I've got my lane, I've got my, you know, my style and that, and I'm just dug in?
I think I'm more in this center. I'm basically doing the same thing that I've been doing. I don't experiment so much. And the one thing that I've been experimenting for the last few years, I've been trying to learn acoustic guitar, because, you know, it's a completely different instrument than electric guitar. And tons of guitars who think they play acoustic guitar, but, you know, we really don't. It's a different art.
Right.
So I've been trying to learn that a lot.
Right. Just ask Tommy Emmanuel. Right. So I got to ask, when is the solo Smooth Jazz album coming out?
Actually, I've been, for the last 2 years, I've been writing songs myself. I think it won't be like that. I think it'll be more like, more on the blues gender. That's more of my stuff, though. I think I have now about 8 songs ready. When I hit 15, I'm gonna record it. Most likely, I'm hoping. Who knows? By the end of next year, I'll get it done.
Yeah. You know, it's like a lot of guys go through their entire career and never really record anything of their own.
Yeah.
Not that you have to release it or anything, but they spend a lifetime recording albums with the groups and the people they're with.
Yeah,
but they don't ever, you know, pin their own stuff and do it. I think that's cool that you're doing that, though. I really do.
Yeah, I try to, you know, I think when you get older, you start thinking that, oh, I have to get this done eventually before, you know, before it's too late. And then you start thinking, you know, so someday you're 70 and you think, well, what the hell didn't I do it when I still could?
Right.
Not that there's a lot of people that still play when they're 70, but, you know,
you never
know what happens tomorrow, so.
Yeah, there comes a time where the hands start to curdle up and you don't have the strength and all that other kind of stuff. I'm not looking forward to those days. So how many guitars you got?
I'm not 100% sure. I would say about 45 now, this right now.
Okay. And what about amps?
Amps, I have, actually, I think I have five.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you have a shitload of pedals and effects and stuff like that, or is all that gone since you got the Kemper?
Most is gone. I think my pedal board has about eight.
Yeah.
Left that I occasionally use.
Yeah. And the ones you use, what do you use? I'm curious.
What I have a one tube like preamp of it's a brand from Netherlands, I think it's named Koch, like KOHC. That's yeah. That's basically where comes all the sound. Now, you know, clean lead rhythm, everything comes from there. And then the most of it is MXR pedals. I have some delay and reverb. I don't really use lots of effects. Then I have the Eddie Van Halen wah pedal that I also keep using. And
so on your Kemper, I'm curious of what your amp is. I saw you got some Marshall amps there. Are you using a Marshall in the Kemper?
I mean, we tried that. We didn't get any sound that matched with the band. So I'm using actually a Bogner Übershall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well,
that we copied. So that's what we're using now.
Yeah, well, that's an amp right there, boy.
Yeah.
I know. I've talked to some of the harder bands, and some of them are using a lot of them are using the EVH, the Eddie Van Halen amps, and that, you know.
Yeah.
Man, those are badass. I've got the I got the Stealth 5150. Man, that amp is.
That's awesome.
I don't even know what to do with it, to be honest with you. So when's the band going on tour? Are you on tour now, or are you getting ready to go? Or
no, I getting ready. So we're gonna go, actually next month we're gonna go to. Wait, I have to cheat. I forgot the name of the festival. We're gonna go to. Virginia International Race, where they have the Blue Ridge Rock Fest.
Oh,
so we're gonna play it there on 2 days.
Oh, wow! So is that the only dates you're in America, or are you coming back to America later?
This was the only, but we are planning to do a bigger tour after. And first we're gonna do this, then on November October and November we have some shows in South America. We have like eight shows in Argentina and. Yeah. Then we are as soon as we get to America now, we are going to negotiate to try to get a bigger tour to go back to USA. Yeah. Because that's one thing we never managed to do. We never toured USA. We've been to Europe many times, but USA we never played there. So
I know a lot of bands, you know, outside of America that don't come here simply because of the cost of visa.
Yeah.
Visas and the cost, you know, just the cost of tour. I mean, hell, there's bands here that aren't touring anymore. Look at Ted Nugent. I mean, Ted Nugent, he's stopping simply because of the cost of touring.
Oh, it's getting extremely expensive. In Europe, it's the same thing. I heard like a tour bus, it's in some places where you rent, it's more than double than it was before the pandemic. So it's extremely expensive.
Yeah,
bands are going back to touring with the van because they can't afford the tour bus anymore.
So what do you think about this whole, because it hasn't really been a huge thing for a long time, but I really dislike it a lot. And that's the whole buying on to a tour. So if you want to tour, if Armored Dawn wants to tour with Metallica, you got to pay X amount of dollars to get on that tour. I think that's such a shitty thing. What do you think of that?
It's wrong. That's how it works. But I really, really hate it because, you know, you're there to work, not to pay somebody to work. That really sounds wrong, but that's the way it seems to be working these days. And I think it's been like that for a long time already. And especially now because bands are low on cash, they're low on income, and they try to get money from wherever they can. So whoever pays the most, let's welcome them here. And it's not so much about having fun and, you know, playing with the friends like it sometimes was. And
You know, I had a conversation with a guy, I'm not going to say who it was, a while back because when I first started playing in Chicago in on the blues circuit, the old timers, if they really felt like you had potential and you were serious and you were respectful in that, they would really invest in you as a player, right? Yeah. They would invite you places. They would give you advice. They would, you know, help you get shows. They would turn you on to, other people to play with or whatever it was. And then it seemed like as time's gone on, that's completely gone away and nobody really invests in the up and coming. And everybody is, well, you got to pay to play or you got to buy on to a tour.
Yeah.
And the people that are already established and already made it, people who had the same experience I had are treating the people up and coming as if, you know, they don't even exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's really, really sad. It's basically because the younger bands that are coming out there, they are the future, you know. Without them, the rock music gonna die.
Yeah, yeah. I think there needs to be more people investing in younger bands and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that, you know? And same with venues, as opposed to charging a band to play at their venue.
Yeah.
Oh my God, give somebody a break, you know?
And outside, especially Europe, there's lots of venues that they are charging some percent for you to sell your merchandise inside this building. So you have to pay like 15% to, you know. Because that's basically, for many cases, that's the only profit that the band is making. And even from that, you have to pay for the owner of the venue.
Yeah, that doesn't...
That really sucks.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, you know, because they're making their money.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making their money, and especially if they sell alcohol, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
They forget that who brought their clients to buy alcohol was the band.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. So when does the next single come out?
I think we most likely, I think in the beginning of December, we're going to put still one more single out then.
Okay.
Then beginning of next year, we're going to put the rest of the whole album out.
Yeah.
Finally. And we are already writing material for the follow-up.
Yeah. Well, really cool, man. I wish you all the, you know, success. I wish you all the best and good luck in Virginia.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
I wish that I was free, because if I was, I'd come out, because that would be a really cool show, and I would like to get to see you guys. Hopefully, you'll come back to America. You know,
later. Surely, as soon as we get any tour around your way, I'll keep you posted.
And I'm gonna wait to see photographs of you playing that Telecaster on stage.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna do it.
With a stack of Marshalls behind me. I appreciate you coming on. I always enjoy talking to you and chatting with you online and stuff. I love what you guys do. You're a great band. You're a great player, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. Anytime, just keep us posted, and we'll be back. And any news we have, I'll keep you posted for any details. And always a pleasure to talk about guitars and stuff.
All right. Very good. You take care, and I'll talk to you later, okay?
You too. See ya. Right.
Later. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode, this conversation with Timo from Armored Dawn. I want to thank him so much for the friendship and for being on another episode with us here on Guitar Talk. I want to wish him and his band Armored Dawn all the success in the world. It was an absolute pleasure being able to spend a little bit of time with him and talk guitars, which is something that we really enjoy doing here. Now, we've got a lot of great guests in the lineup coming down the road. We've got Doug Aldridge from the Dead Daisies. We've got Martin Barr, who was the guitarist for Jethro Tull, Trevor Rabin from the band Yes, Steve Hackett from Genesis. I mean, the list goes on and on. Oh my God, there's so many people. And so you want to make sure that you're going to Spotify and you're subscribing to Guitar Talk so you can make sure that you get all the really cool content. But until then, you know, go to guitartalkofficial.com, check out what's going on, listen to past episodes, see who's coming up, because there's a lot of cool people coming up. And until next Wednesday, I'm Jimmy Warren. Thank you so much for tuning in to Guitar Talk.